Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar.
An American Bombing, The Road to April 19th, looks at the surge in homegrown political violence through the story of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, showing the roots of anti-government sentiment and its reverberation today, along with the emotionally charged warnings of those who suffered tragic losses in the deadliest homegrown attack in U.S. history. Powerful, powerful film this is. It will be premiering on HBO and streaming on Max beginning on April 16th. Be looking for this. And we're joined today, honored to be joined today by the
filmmaking team behind An American Bombing, The Road to April 19th, and that would be director Mark Levin and executive producer Daphne Pinkerson. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio. With this tragic anniversary upon us, and so much of what is happening in American political and cultural life that seems to be pushing us closer and closer to some horrific possibilities. Tell me a little bit about what put you on to doing this particular project. Let's start with the executive producer, Daphne Pinkerson. Daphne, what started you down the road to this particular project?
Well, we had done a film with Bill Moyers in 1995. He thought it was important to talk to the survivors and the family members of the victims to say that, 1 year later, they're still suffering and they need to be heard. So we did that film with him, and HBO knew that we had done that. And Katie Couric went to talk to them about doing a film on Where Are They Now? And she had covered the Oklahoma City bombing. She was there, the day after it happened. HBO had remembered that we had done this film with Bill Moyers, and so they made an introduction to Katie Couric, and she became the executive producer. We weren't able to really cover the political side of it back then, because it was very much focused on the victims, but we had stayed in touch with the victims. So we sort of combined that story to see where those people were now, almost 30 years later. So that's sort of the genesis of it. I mean, we were looking at the surge in political violence through the story of the biggest, the deadliest attack in U.S. history against the government. That was the reason that we did it. And to go back and look at the landscape that McVeigh emerged from and what influenced him, we realized that we had to go back to the 1980s, because those were the elders who had these organizations at the time that were really pushing the anti-government mentality. And, so much of it came out of the farm crisis with these, white supremacists exploiting the legitimate concerns of these people, of the farmers. That's the genesis of it.
Okay. Well, and Mark, I want to congratulate you not only on a story well told, but the way that you are able to place emphasis. This is something I didn't about the farming crisis. I mean, I lived through this. There's some vague memory of American farming being under duress for decades and decades in this country. I mean, going back to the Dust Bowl. I mean, there's all kinds of things that sort of come together in this nexus of all of this anger and political tumult over all of this, over so much. But I love the way that the film finds other stories to be explored in this, in the telling of this. Did you have a vague idea, or did you have an idea of going into this, where this was going to take you in terms of the storytelling?
Well, I think, as Daphne said, one of the starting places, we had to keep somehow this connection that we personally had made with these characters back in 1995, and they're all in the film. Kathy's in the film, Marsha's in the film, Bud's in the film, LaDonna's in the film, Nancy's in the film. So those were people we had met, and we felt some kind of bond and that it was important somehow to somehow figure out how to weave their moments in the film. The larger story, I think the breakthrough was really learning more about this original plot that, quite frankly, in 1995, when we first went to Oklahoma City right after the bombing, we didn't know about. I know it had, there were some reports about it, but we weren't aware of it. And then meeting Terry Noble, who had been part of the original plot to blow up the Murrow Building in 1983. That was, I think, the beginning on one hand. And then the other hand was when we went down to meet with Kathy, who we had worked with in 95. And she was, and her husband really, were the ones who turned us on to Elohim City. And we, Daphne and I, actually went to Elohim City in the fall of 1995. Sat with Robert Millar, the head of Elohim City, but she got cut out of the film because, as Daphne said, the focus then was on the stories of the survivors and victims, and they didn't want to get into the investigative side. But when we went down to Arkansas and spent a weekend with her, and just her life story and all that she had done and the journey she had been on to find the larger story. And then the final coup de grace was, of course, when she told us that her son was, who had found her two baby grandchildren, was on January 6th working with the Capitol Police during the riot. We were just like, what? But that's where a larger movie started to take form. Those, I think, were two things. And then the third thing was this idea. I was, you know, I'd heard from the authors of the McVeigh's autobiography, American Terrorist, this whole idea that he lived out of his car, he called it the Road Warrior, and that, you know, he just traveled from gun show to gun show for 2 years and just was listening over and over to this hate radio and tapes and just almost like a behavior modification chamber, prepping himself to be the man that was going to commit the act that started the second American Revolution, and to try to find a stylized cinematic way that we could kind of approach that. Those three things were there at the beginning in terms of, okay, we got a larger story to tell.
Well, in addition to being, a thorough forensic breakdown of what happened on April 19th, 1995, in addition to that, being that breakdown of all of it, and as we see the sort of the detective work that's being done in the film, what I found to be so enlightening and troubling at the same time is to start to pull on those threads. Going back to Louis Beam, you go almost as far back as you want to in American history. There's always been this strain in American history, right? And I don't want to get too far down this road. Racism, feeling of grievances by white people have been with us since the signing of the Constitution.
Let me help you on that. I mean, because you're right. First of all, it's in the DNA of the American experience, because the American Revolution itself was against, you know, a state authority, you know, the king. So, and then the idea of even forming a union with all these different states. So a lot of this, and then going through the horrible Civil War. What I think is unique about where we start in the late 70s, early 80s, is that some of these extremist groups, some white power groups, some anti-tax groups, some, you know, I guess you call them biker groups, all different kinds of people who normally wouldn't talk to each other. The KKK with some of the Christian identity, these groups started to find common ground. And that's what we call the modern patriot movement. As you say, there are strains of all of these in the American experience, but them joining forces and them joining in a common goal to go to war against the federal government and a common strategy of leaderless resistance, meaning that they figured out that, you know, just having a classic organizational hierarchical structure, you know, you can, the leaders are then culpable, but if you've got this leaderless resistance where there's still leaders, but you can't trace them back to these violent actions. That's what started to coalesce in the late 70s and early 80s. And then the great economic transformations that were happening, not only in agriculture, but in manufacturing, and the wars we got involved in, from Vietnam to the Gulf War to the drug war here at home. All of those are the new patriot movement. The movement we track in waves, first waves in the 80s, second wave in the 90s, third wave we're living through right now. So that's the unique manifestation. And what's unique about today is that that world is, one, gone mainstream. It's not hiding anymore. It's even in our Congress. It's in governor's mansions, et cetera. And two, the technology of spreading that. You don't have to be in your road warrior across crisscrossing the country going to gun shows. You can be at home like what we are, just on the web and social media, and kind of brainwash yourself. And, you know, and then what they call it today is accelerationists. In other words, anybody that causes, you know, just catastrophe, mass shootings, horror, you know, is contributing to the destabilization of our society that can be then taken advantage of and capitalized by these extremist groups. So you're right. It's a strain that's always been in the American DNA, but the unique part that we follow and that McVeigh really came out of was really born post-Vietnam.
There are certain wars that have continued to haunt us, and the Civil War is our haunting war. And in some ways, the Confederacy is now metastasized around the country. They, don't forget, they called it the Lost Cause, right? I mean, this is something that we're still dealing with. We're still dealing with the impact of the Civil War from the 1860s. But I want to go back to the storytelling and to the filmmaking here, because, again, you follow all of these threads in some way or another. And the fact that you are able to pull in the parts of the story that are a little unsettling and unsettled about Oklahoma City and the different people who were involved, whether or not the government had a plant, or there's all kinds of things in the film that I really think is so important. Rather than just pretend they didn't happen or that doesn't exist, you address it. Daphne, you do a great job of pulling people into this conversation that I think is hard to listen to. It's hard to kind of process, but at the same time, you're not afraid to deal with it in the film.
I mean, you put your finger on obviously something that Daphne and I, you know, was a challenge. In other words, we felt you can't tell the story without acknowledging that there are certain unanswered questions. At the same time, you know, we didn't want the film to just be dismissed as a conspiracy in the world we're now in, you know, just labeled and dismissed. Oh, that's a fine balance, because there are unanswered questions, both in terms of others unknown and any prior knowledge the government might have had. And so we felt it was important to acknowledge those. But we didn't want to get so lost in the rabbit hole, because believe me, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, we could have devoted an episode to Elohim City, an episode to the Aryan Republican Army, you know, an episode to Andreas Strassmeyer. I mean, you know, these are, so to find the right balance so that we respect that our audience is intelligent and they should know that there are unanswered questions, but not get so lost that you lose the meta story, right, which is we're talking about now. We're talking about how we ended up here. And there may have been some others involved. There may have been prior knowledge. Whatever that is, the fact is that these ideas and this rage and this ferocity of going against our own government is not just some single person, some crazed single person. No, this runs deep. And this has emerged now. And we got to deal with that. So we didn't want to lose that. So it was a very, very tricky balance. And I give Daphne a lot of credit in trying to maintain that balance, because it's easy to fall into one of those rabbit holes.
You know, what was our sort of guiding light is, everything, the story was told in service of the movement.
Yes.
You know, whether or not Timothy McVeigh did it alone or not, he shared an ideology with the movement. So, you know, he was at the gun shows where, you know, they say that they, you know, they weren't just selling guns, they were selling ideology. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence that he was connected to a lot of people out there. But no one has been able to sort of get the smoking gun, because it may be because there were informants involved. So the government was never going to be able to reveal it, because if they revealed that they worked with informants, no one would ever be an informant, you know?
Well, and I think it's important, and the film makes this point over and over again. Let's not take our eye off the ball here. 168 people died in a massive, horrifying way, and the accountability needs to be addressed. Who's responsible for this? We'll deal with the other things as they present themselves in a way that we can deal with them, right? That's, I just think that that's so important. But again, I think you did a great service to including what you did in the film. I really felt that just, it adds so much credibility and gravitas to the film and to the filmmaking, the way you went about doing it.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, because it was, an area of much discussion.
Oh, I can only imagine. Oh, I can only imagine. Because it's so hard. It's so hard to not be pulled into these, as you say, these black holes of just, and you end up chasing your tail. It's just, and at some point, maybe in the history of forensic science, we'll be able to detail all of these things and break them down in a way that's more understandable and gives some kind of comfort to those who wonder about these things, but maybe not. And that's not your job. Your job is to tell this story, which I just really, this is so powerful. I just recently saw Against All Enemies. I had the filmmaker on. And this idea presented in the film that I think is, again, so important, that these long, protracted wars are a feeding frenzy for these lunatics who are trying to present the U.S. as something else, something other than what it is. And I'm so glad that this is becoming more, it seems, feels like it's more and more part of the zeitgeist. We're in a 20-year war in Vietnam. We're in a 20-year war in Afghanistan, a short but brutal war in Iraq. I mean, these things feed into this frenzy that we are experiencing now.
Absolutely. I mean, that was
Kathleen Belew.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of Kathleen Belew's assertions that, the peak in enrollment in extremist movements is in the wake of war.
Yeah.
Aftermath of war. That was an eye opener to hear that.
Yeah. Well, let's not forget that Martin Luther King predicted this in his very famous anti-war Vietnam speech, predicted that this was going to come home to roost on our soil. He said it repeatedly, but he said it powerfully in that particular speech about the purveyors of violence in the world. And that will come home to roost.
I'll just add, you're talking to Blowback Productions here. And I mean, that in a sense is where the name of our company comes from. It is that idea that it will come home to roost.
And just how far and how quickly and whatever we can do as responsible citizens to make sure it never happens is up to us, ultimately. Well, I can't thank you enough. I just, again, your work is, it stands on its own. It speaks for itself, not only here, but in so many other films that you've been a part of. Again, this one, An American Bombing, The Road to April 19th, will be premiering on HBO on April 16th. And that's a Tuesday, and we'll be streaming on Max.
Thank you, director Mark Levin and producer Daphne Pinkerson.
Appreciate it. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.